Hi, it's the Greg Kelly Podcast. I am Greg Kelly. And recently, my Newsmax show made all kinds of news because I hosted Bill Stevenson. Bill is the ex-husband of Jill Biden, the first lady. And he has got quite a story. So how this came up was in 2020, Bill Stevenson was approached, I think, by CBS Inside Edition, one of those shows. And he gave an interview and talked about how when he was married to Jill, she had an affair with Joe Biden, Senator Joe Biden. Bill got to know Joe before he became a senator, as he was running for senator, and they all became friends. And Jill and Joe's wife Nelia, and they did a lot of campaigning together. And Bill, very successful businessman, by the way, owned a legendary club called the Stone Balloon. Anyway, we'll get into it. But I saw that interview in 2020, and it was really remarkable. He spoke about, yes, this is a historic fact, Joe Biden had an affair with my then wife. And, you know, that seems like that's pretty, I don't know if you want to call it salacious or whatever, but he didn't deliver it in a salacious manner. He just did it in a factual and also human manner. In my opinion, there are a billion reasons to not vote for Joe Biden. The fact that there was an extramarital affair in the early 1970s, and that's not one of them, in my opinion. Now, for some people, that would be. But actually, if you look at it, they say, what, half of all marriages end in divorce, and a good chunk of those, there's one spouse is lacking in fidelity or both or whatever. I mean, this stuff happens. Life happens. And it's not good, but things happen. I mean, Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump, we've had divorce presidents before. I don't know. Everybody has a personal life, whatever. But the way he did it, the way Bill Stevenson told this story, really made an impression on me. And I just thought he was a great guy. And I actually did kind of hold it against Joe that the story he was telling about how he met Jill was not true. And in 2020, he got up there and told a fake story about how he and his wife met. And that kind of bothered me. And over the years, I would occasionally refer back to this on television. And I'd always say, you know, Joe Biden, who did this, that, and the other thing. And there was a great guy who was married to Jill named Bill Stevenson. And I always kind of said, great guy named Bill Stevenson. And word got back to Bill that I was doing this, and then I got a call. I can't remember if it was social media or somebody. He called the station and left a message for me, and I thought he might be angry, but he wasn't angry. He just appreciated the kind words. And anyway, we got to talking, and I hosted him on the Newsmax show. And, you know, the whole issue of the affair that Jill had with Joe is really, in a way, besides the point. What happened to Bill Stevenson next, and it looks to me like just vengeance from Joe Biden. He unleashed the FBI and the Justice Department on Bill Stevenson. You know, the most egregious thing that happened in 1982, Bill Stevenson was more or less, he was indicted. He was indicted in April of 1982, April 8th, I believe, for not paying payroll tax for the first quarter of 1982. Get that? First quarter, January, February, March. And they indict him April 8th. It's absurd. It was only $8,000. $8,000 late in payroll. The check was literally in the mail. And they brought him into federal court. His brother ultimately pleaded guilty to that. And much what Donald Trump is going through, Bill Stevenson has been going through over the years, using the federal government to get back at somebody. And that happened to Bill Stevenson. The divorce was, well, he'll characterize it. There was a lawsuit. Jill sued for the house. She didn't get the house. And from what I understand, Joe especially is really bitter about that, or at least was, and his brothers get involved. And anyway, we'll get into it. This particular conversation that we're going to talk about, the early years and Bill Stevenson's background and how he met Jill, and yeah, how the marriage became undone when Jill started seeing Senator Joe Biden. He's a fascinating guy. I'm really glad I've gotten to know him. I think you'll like him. If you didn't see the Newsmax interview, it's worth watching. But before we start, I don't know about you, but I like to wake up every morning knowing I'm doing something for this great country of ours. Ever since the American Revolution, drinking coffee has been declared an act of patriotism. Especially during these times, we cannot forget what makes us uniquely American: hard work, self-determination, and individual liberty. Freedom doesn't brew itself, and that's why I drink D'Espresso Liber coffee. Now, it was founded by a Green Beret almost a decade ago, who developed a dedication to crafting outstanding brews after multiple deployments. D'Espresso Liber coffee is 100% Arabica coffee, sourced from the finest coffee farms from around the world. It is fresh roasted in-house once they receive your order. The D'Espresso Liber experience starts the moment you open the package. It really smells fantastic. And I'm not a coffee connoisseur, but I can tell you that D'Espresso Liber coffee is out of this world. Tasty, full-bodied, smooth. It gives me a delicious jumpstart to my day. Rich in flavor and American values. D'Espresso Liber coffee encourages all of us to sit down together and unite with fellow patriots to celebrate our God-given rights. So, if you want to wake up every morning to a savory, micro-roasted cup of coffee that supports quality coffee farmers, America's special operations community, and our great country, visit DiEspressoLiber.com. That's D'Espresso, D-E, Espresso, E-S-P-R-E-S-S-O, Liber, L-I-B-E-R, D'Espresso Liber, L-I-B-E-R.com. It is veteran-owned, a family-run small business whose brew tastes as good as it will make you feel. After all, freedom does not brew itself. And now we are going to have a conversation with Bill Stevenson, a very interesting guy. Very successful businessman, married to his wife Linda now for several decades, I believe. And, well, at one point in his life, he was married to Jill Biden, currently the First Lady. And what has happened to him since is unbelievable. But these days, it totally makes sense. They have persecuted him like they persecute Donald Trump. My conversation with Bill Stevenson. Bill, thank you very much. How have the last 2 weeks been for you?
Quite amazing, Greg. I knew that people wanted to hear my story, but I didn't realize how far it would travel and how positive it would be. And it's something short of amazing. The surprising thing is I'm hearing from people in Japan, the United Kingdom, all over the United States. I'm pretty well known and have a lot of friends and a huge Facebook following, but I didn't expect 99% positive on Facebook. Even my liberal friends love to hear the story, and many were very surprised, Greg.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and you do it with a, you know, you do it with class. There's just something about it and about you that people really respond to. It's authentic. You're honest, but you're not taking any nasty shots at your ex-wife, which I think somehow people appreciate. Is it fair to say, look, there are a million reasons to not vote for Joe Biden? A million reasons. I'm not voting for him. I didn't vote for him. But quite frankly, the marital situation with you and everything like that, is that a reason to not vote for Joe Biden?
I was reading one negative comment, and it sort of explained everything when I was looking at the reviews, so to speak, Greg. And one guy said, Well, it's been a while ago, but the guy doesn't seem bitter. But let's face it, it looks like a tiger's stripes never change. This guy's been doing this for years. I couldn't have said it better. There were some issues back there that went beyond Jill. My divorce from Jill is absolutely no reason that I can think of to vote against him. But there's a thousand other reasons to vote against President Biden right now. It just doesn't make sense that he would change. I mean, every day there's something new coming out. And by the way, as a lot of people are thinking and saying, every day they produce something horrible about President Biden, President Trump gets indicted the next day for something else. It's been a pattern. It basically happened, you know, in my life way back. The exact same thing happened, and that's why I came forward, Greg.
Bill, where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Philadelphia in Bucks County. I was actually born in Philadelphia. We moved out to Bucks County when I was 9 years old, right before my birthday in July. I turned 10 at our new home. And I grew up in a place called Holland, Pennsylvania, a great place to grow up. My early years, I went to Council Rock High School. And then, because of a strange turn of events, I spent my last 2 years of high school at a phenomenal prep school called Wyoming Seminary. And I was not really happy that I had to go there for my last 2 years, but I ran out of eligibility to play football, ended up at Wyoming Seminary, and that's up in the Kingston area, the Wilkes-Barre-Kingston area, not far from where Joe Biden grew up in Scranton, which makes it another, like, weird section of our life, so to speak, back there, you know, in those days. But I loved where I grew up. I came to Delaware in 1968 on a football scholarship.
Just tell me a little bit about your parents, and did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah. Matter of fact, my parents were very interesting. Talk about a couple that had fun. They were the fun parents. My father was a vice president for years at Minneapolis Honeywell. And then he and my Uncle Chris went into business. My father joined my Uncle Chris at a company called Booten Molding. And they did high-tech injection molding, and my Uncle Chris was a leader in the plastics industry and had some great U.S. patents. And they were in a situation where my father was going to buy my Uncle Chris's share out of Booten Molding. And tragically, but you know, I'm over this too, so to speak, on my graduation day from Wyoming Seminary, my father passed away. He never made it to my graduation. It changed what school that I was attending to play football. And that's how I ended up here in Delaware. My parents were great. They were fun. My mother was amazing. They both died. They both came from big families and were the youngest to die. I have an older sister, Joni, that lives near me here in Delaware. And my brother lives in California because of what happened to him back in 1982. He packed up his bags, moved to California, and split us up forever, and has not been back in Delaware since.
We're going to talk all about him and what drove him away. Just first, Wyoming Seminary. It's a high school. Was it technically a seminary, you know, for the priesthood or something, or the clergy, or what?
It was years ago. It was a seminary way back in the 1800s. It is probably one of the least unknown great prep schools in the country. They have a ton of money. People have donated heavily. Some famous people have gone there. I went there because they had an amazing football team, and they've led the country in prep school wrestling. They win national championships every year. They're in the same league as the Hill School, the Blair School, Lawrenceville, Germantown Academy, Penn Charter here. They play in that league, and I just met some amazing people. Ironically enough, my business partner of 52 years, I met at Wyoming Seminary in 1967, 68, and the school just literally changed my life. I was able to study the Bible. I was able to continue my love of God. And it just put some ethics in me that very, very few people get the chance to go to. Wyoming Seminary, you can Google it. It's Wyoming Seminary Preparatory School in Kingston, Pennsylvania. A beautiful campus. Every 30 years, it's underwater by the Susquehanna River, whether it needs it or not. But just an amazing school with amazing people. And I just returned there a couple months ago for my 55th anniversary of graduation.
I'm looking at it right now.
Class reunion.
It looks beautiful. It's like a college.
It is like a college. Non-sectarian, 20% all religions. We have people coming there from all over the country. It is just a spectacular school, and I thank God every day for my Uncle Bill Hingston, who was Dr. Bill Hingston, superintendent of the Abington School District, one of the greatest school districts in the country outside Philadelphia. When he found out I was not eligible to play my senior year at Council Rock High School, he came over to our house with a little pamphlet. And I looked at it and I said, oh, this is not for me. And then the funny thing is, Greg, we go up to look at the place. And I said, this is actually a nice little town. And then all of a sudden, I see a couple of very pretty young co-eds walking by. And I go, who are they? I thought it was an all-male school. And my mother turned to me and she goes, oh, it's co-ed. And ironically enough, I met some great friends there and have nothing but high praise for the school. Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, Pennsylvania.
So did you go from there direct to University of Delaware?
What actually happened, I picked another school where I was offered a couple college scholarships. I picked another school. And then on the death of my father, I said in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I said, you know what? I don't want to be that far away from my mother. I'm going to stay right here in the Delaware Valley somehow. And strangely enough, through the recruiting, my father had become friends with the amazing coach. They call him Tubby Raymond. And he's legendary from the University of Delaware. Just a great guy. He actually became enough friends with my father where he felt comfortable to come see what was going on at the funeral and pay his respects. I had two schools that really wanted me, the University of Pennsylvania and the University of Delaware, among a couple others, but they were the final two, and thank God I came here to Delaware.
What position did you play?
In prep school, I played fullback and defensive end. At the University of Delaware, I only played defensive end. Now, what happened was, I thought my parents might have had like a lot more money, and things were a little tough. I played my first year as a freshman, and that was 1968-69, and I realized that my mother needed some help. So I dropped out of school and started Stevenson Van Transport, the company I still run today.
So, all right. When do you meet Jill?
I met Jill that exact same summer after Wyoming Seminary. It was 1969, and we were in Ocean City, New Jersey, and I had this very rare 68 Camaro. Everybody knows what they are now and the value of them now, but I bought a 68 Z28 Camaro for $3,200. And Jill came up with a couple of her girlfriends when we were at the car wash, spraying them off, and asked about the car. And that's how I met Jill. It was right before Woodstock in the summer of 1969, and I told her that I had plans to go to Woodstock in the next couple of days, but I would stop back when I got back, and she was working at a little diner called the Seaway Diner, right on 9th Street, right as you come over the bridge from the mainland, New Jersey. And when I got back, I asked her to go to, everybody knows the Coors Brothers ice cream stores. Mark Coors was a friend of mine, and he invited me to his birthday party. He lived above the Coors Brothers out on the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey, and Jill went to me And that was like mid-August 1969. And the rest is history. We were married on February 7th, 1970, 6 months later.
Real quick, how was Woodstock? You were there. What was that like?
Woodstock for me was very interesting. My sister was working at a company in New York City called Free Flow Productions. And they're a company that was a little famous back then. And she knew of Woodstock because I think they were doing the actual production of, I believe, the lights or something to do with it. And she said, if you go to Woodstock, you can probably get a job because I'm a talented carpenter. And my wife is actually laughing at that right now, but that's okay. I thought I was a talented carpenter, Greg. But anyway, we got up there on Thursday. And I pulled up and we parked really close to the stage, we thought. But what it turned out to be was the little secondary stage where a lot of the performers played, just on the other side of the hill from the main stage. But it was a huge mistake. I parked my car, and 2 days later, there were about 1,000 cars parking it in. And so Woodstock was interesting for me. The weather was crazy. What we had planned to do was go over on Thursday, ask for a job. My parents had a summer home off of Lake Tediscon, about 42 miles away. We were going to go back to Lake Tediscon, get some supplies, and go back the next day. Well, the problem was, by Thursday late afternoon, when we were going to go home to get some food and some money, we were parked in. So we were there in like a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. No preparation, no tent, no nothing. So it was a unique experience, Greg. But it's become more unique as time went on, that's for sure.
Okay, so you get married. Did you get married in a church, a civil ceremony? What do you remember about the wedding itself?
Well, the wedding was unique because Jill's family was Catholic. And at that time, she decided to switch religions to Presbyterian. So we were married. I was Episcopalian. I didn't care where we got married. I was just, I was in love. And her father and mother and her sisters were just amazing. Just an amazing family that I've said before. And I've mentioned to people, Greg, that is probably what I lost most. But we were married in a Presbyterian church in Abington, Pennsylvania. Big wedding, probably 150 of their friends and family. And, my mother and my sisters and brother and my sister and brother and maybe two or three of my family members and like 10 of my friends. So there were about 25 people there for me and probably another 125 Don Jacobs, Jill's father's and mother's friends there. But it was a beautiful wedding.
Again, how old are you and how old is Jill?
Right now, I'm 75. I believe Jill was probably 72, maybe.
No, and back then when you got married?
Oh, back then. Jill had just turned 18 when I met her. So she was like 18 and a half, going on 19 in February. Her birthday's in June. And I was just turning 20. Like, I believe when I met her, it was August. So I had just turned 20. So I was 21. She was 18.
So what was she like? What is she like? What was she like during that time? What drew you to her and what was it? What's she all about?
Total fun girl. Matter of fact, for her first birthday, I bought her a surfboard and we had a place in Ocean City, New Jersey. The Stone Balloon wasn't opened yet. And my trucking company literally took off. I tell everybody, I took Jill to a meeting with General Electric for the manufacturers of fluorescent lights. And somebody told me that they were having a hard time getting the fluorescent light bulbs delivered to the Acme and the A&P and the big department stores in Philadelphia because they were arriving broken. So I went up there, and like a lot of people were back then, and the guy we were meeting with couldn't take his eyes off of Jill, didn't care about me. he looked at me like halfway through the thing. He goes, "Oh, okay, okay. We'll let you deliver our light bulbs." And we had an amazing contract. And so the company took off. I had three vans within the first year. We always thought if I had two vans and four guys, I could make money. We had three vans, and we would do anything, even on weekends. We needed money so badly, we actually moved a house once, like everything in the house for $200. Three of my buddies and a truck, we moved a house about 10 miles away.
So everything, okay, I'm sorry. So you're married, everything is beautiful, I assume, right? I mean, the initial year is all good, right?
Yeah, things were good. We were having fun. The stone balloon wasn't pulled yet. We used to go to a place that was extremely popular in Newark, right up the street to the Deer Park on Thursday nights, like everybody did. We went to the football games. I stayed really close with everybody. And then one day, without even saying anything to Jill or her dad or anybody in my family, my mother was still alive, I drove by this beautiful building on Main Street, 115 East Main Street. There's pictures of the stone balloon. You can Google the building because it was a beautiful building. And I saw a sale sign on it. Now, you have to remember, we were only married a year. My trucking business was doing well, but I just realized, I said to myself, this town needs more fun and a place to go to see entertainment. I knew nothing about the bar business. I knew nothing about how to renovate a building. I owned a little construction, not construction company. I owned a little trucking company that was, completely anything that I should have had any experience from, to run a bar and own a construction company later. We basically did half the work on the stone balloon ourselves, not knowing what we were doing, and it came out. So I was working crazy hours. And Jill started at the University of Delaware. We were having a good time and working hard, Greg.
Okay, so your business is thriving, and then you had some sort of issue. I don't know if it was a licensing issue or some regulation issue, but you needed help with something, and you approached, I believe, the incumbent senator, Caleb Boggs. Is that right?
That's correct. And that happened. This is the whole reason that Joe Biden and I became friends. I bought the building on the 8th of August, 1971. The very next day, a beautiful building and hotel, it was called Merle's Tavern, but it used to be called the Washington House. It was a huge building on Main Street. Now, you have to remember, the Vietnam War was raging. I still had to stay in school part-time, just to continue my education and continue my status of being a student. And all of the sudden, the next day, after working 14 hours a day for 3 days of purchasing the building, we bought the building on the 8th of August, probably on the 11th of August, the building was condemned. They made such a huge mistake. There was a package store on the left side of the building. It was probably only 30 feet by 20 feet, but it was income. What happened was the city condemned the building. They wouldn't give me a building permit. We had just transferred the liquor licenses. And I went to the city and they said, "No, no, no, you're going to have to knock the whole building down." And I said, "You're crazy." This is where my life changed. I hired a gentleman referred to me by my best friend's father up in Pennsylvania, named Donald Booker. And let me tell you, Mr. Booker went to work, everybody went to work, and then we got a building permit. We only had to knock down half the building. We started building the building. We built this beautiful addition. A. Mazzetti and Company, the builders from Wilmington, Delaware, did an amazing job. We get the building done. We're just about to open on Christmas, the week of Christmas, 1971, and the city comes over. We're ready to go, and they tell us that the building is bigger than they thought, and that we had to pull all the electric out of the building and put it in conduit.
Put it in what?
Conduit, the metal, you know, like the piping.
Okay.
The building was just regular wiring, but because the building was over 10,000 square feet with the first addition, they knew this was coming. They were so corrupt, it was crazy.
So
I want to see Senator Caleb Boggs.
So they are playing a game with you.
They played a big game, a very nasty game.
And how he's the United States Senator for Delaware, and you actually get to see him in person?
Well, I did go see him in person, yes. A friend of mine, Jimmy, loaded me, who lived in Wilmington, loaded our stuff and our paperwork and all the issues, and we thought we'd have a little meeting. I tried to call to make a meeting to arrange a time, and they said, well, the senator is in town. Just come up and stop by. If it's going to just take a couple minutes, come on up. Well, I went up to see Senator Boggs. I went into the building. We went upstairs. The funny thing about this was my grandmother, Ida Hinkston, who was a well-known Republican leader in the Philadelphia area, knew him and told me to go meet him. You know, on our last interview, I said, if I made a mistake, I did not mention her name first. I said, I think that the city of Newark is so corrupt and I need your help. And a guy that I've been told time and time again that never gets upset was visibly upset in front of me. I think I hit a nerve because the mayor, the Hanloff family, was pretty powerful in Newark. I never accused them, and I became very good friends with the family over the years. She and I became buddies after a couple of years. Everything did work out. But boy, he got upset and he yelled at me and he said, get out of my office. Go see that joke, Joe Biden. And that was probably late December, early January 1971, or the first week of 1972 in the winter. And I went to see Joe Biden. He was a county councilman. He wasn't my councilman because I was in the city of Newark, but he surrounded the city of Newark. And, you know, big smile, pat me on the back. He goes, I'll see what I can do. And I became friends with him.
Did you go to see him? Were you referred to him because he was running for the Senate or because he was the councilman?
I was referred to him because he was running for the Senate, but I wasn't really referred to him. I never thought of going to him. I didn't know I could go to him. It was Caleb Boggs, ironically, who told me to go to him. And I said, this is very nice, but he's not my councilman. But where else do I go? We had the mayor and the city council of Newark, but they were all against me. And I needed an ally. And my lawyer, in the meantime, had filed suit to get a cease and desist for the city. And so I go to meet Joe Biden. Pats me on the back. We talk. He says, I'll do whatever I can. And 2 days later, we got a cease and desist from the city of Newark. I was out of money. I went to the people, Globe Electric, Jimmy and his brother, who owned Globe Electric, a big electrical union company in Delaware. And I said, guys, I don't know what I can do. I thought we were opening. I'm out of money, and I can't afford to put this in conduit. I think I'm like, I don't know what to do. And Jimmy looked right at me and he goes, Bill, we're not going to let this happen. We're going to rewire the whole building. Hopefully you'll pay us back someday. And oh my God, every day I get up, I think about those guys. I think about how they saved me. The builder, Remo Mazzetti of A. Mazzetti.
Well, did Joe Biden come through? Did he do anything?
No, nothing happened.
He didn't.
It happened so quick the other way. But he said he was going to help. He never did anything. If he did anything, I don't know about it. I never heard he did anything. And I don't blame that on him then. You know, I blame that on nothing happened because we got the court action. The court saw that everything was being unfair there. And I got my building permit to replace the electricity. And thank God we opened up on February 22nd, 1972.
What was it like?
Sorry, Greg.
No, forgive me. What was it like when you met Joe Biden? Where did you meet him and how did he strike you? You said the big smile and everything like that, but tell me a little bit more about that first meeting.
Well, that was interesting because I haven't really thought about that much in years. But there used to be a little county building. The city of Newark is a city of, it's surrounds the University of Delaware. If it wasn't for the University of Delaware, that nobody would ever go to Newark. But let me tell you, the University of Delaware at that time had like 12,000 people. The city was like 21,000 people. And that'll be critical later. And the county building was probably, I guess, about 5 or 6 miles just north in between Wilmington and Newark, Delaware. And I looked up the address. I looked up his number. I saw where it was. Again, my friend Jimmy that lived in Delaware his whole life, we jump in his car and we go to the county building. And it was like a refurbished old school. That was the county building. I believe it was like an elementary school or something. We're walking down the hall and we see, you know, Joe Biden's office. And I go walking in and I had no idea what he looked like. I had no idea his history or, you know, anything about him. And I walk in and I say, you know, tell him who I am. I say, I'm Bill Stevenson and I'm trying to build a bar. He goes, oh, yeah, Bill, I've been reading about you in the paper. He goes, looks like things are going wrong for you down there. I mean, like the typical Joe big smile. I think fondly of that first meeting because even though he didn't do anything for me, we get the stone balloon opened. And one day I turn around and there comes Joe Biden and a couple people through the front door of the stone balloon. We opened up on February 22nd. This was probably March or April because we were all over the newspaper with the success of this bar.
So
everybody was reading it.
All right. So, but again, like what was he like? What was he like? His personality, his demeanor, what did you think of him?
Exactly what you would expect and exactly what people look back at old videos and stuff like that. Had a smile. I believed him. Or I wouldn't have backed him for Senate. And he came in. I showed him around the stone balloon. We hadn't yet refurbished our offices upstairs. The big band room wasn't upstairs. And we had two bars. And we had a capacity of about 400 people. That was 1972. I built four different additions, added four bars, added a big deck, refurbished the upstairs, so the place became quite spectacular. The bands just wanted to play there. But Joe walked through the building, he listened, he turned around, he goes, would you throw a fundraiser for me? And I didn't know anything about politics, Greg, or how it worked. I didn't know about writing checks. I didn't know about donations or limits or anything. The guy won me over. You know, he was a real nice guy. You know, if he patted me on the back once, he probably patted me on the back eight different times. The crazy thing was, in less than 2.5 years, his brother Jimmy and another guy named Joey Reardon opened up the competition probably just up on the Delaware-Pennsylvania line. And that's like one of the great stories in my book that we haven't talked about. But his brother went into the bar business like 15 miles from me. And, you know, I tried to keep it as friendly as possible. And, but that turned south real quick, you know, my relationship with Jimmy.
And he was not good. He was not good at managing that place or running it, right?
It was in a shopping center. I had a total debt of the stone balloon. I owned the building. I bought property. I had a debt of less than $400,000 on a bar that was bringing in $2.5-3 million. A year. They got loans of $1.8 million from First Pennsylvania Bank, $562,000 from Farmers Bank, and they brought a couple of my friends in as investors.
Well,
and
Bill,
I became friends with them later.
All right, let's put him over there for a second. Right. So you told me you became friends with Joe Biden. Like,
Yes, I did.
So what was the friendship like? How close did you guys get?
Okay, first of all, he invited me out to his house and showed me around. At this point, I had not met Neilia. This was probably April. And he lived right out in a little place called North Star. He had a renovated farmhouse that was on maybe an acre or two. I drive by it all the time because That's the way to get to 202 North, you know, where everybody drives in Delaware. And, you know, it was like a simple little place. It looked like it needed a lot of work. And, you know, I actually said to myself, I thought politicians had more. It's ironic how that turned out. And I met him and I said, I'll throw a fundraiser. So that was probably the first fundraiser was probably in May. Other than that, we didn't meet that much. I was working. I would go to the Stone Balloon at 8 o'clock in the morning. I would, you know, go home to eat, have lunch, hang around the house for a little bit, talk to Jill. I was building a new home in Hocassin at the time. So lots were going on and we had the fundraiser. And that's the first night I met Nelia. And I was charmed by her. She was smart. She was very pretty. And this is what's a little scary in everybody's world. And people talk about this. Jill and Nelia could have been sisters. Roughly the same age, both smart. They you know, probably didn't talk that night. Jill was with a bunch of her friends. They were sitting at a table in the back. She probably maybe met Joe for maybe just as he walked by the table. He worked the crowd, as they say, perfectly. And, you know, I met her and I got to talk to her. And that was the first of three big fundraisers.
And where was, I'm sorry, that was at the Stone Balloon?
That was at the Stone Balloon. And it was probably, he wanted to do college nights. I made a commitment to him and I said, listen, we rule this town now. We got open. They made a big mistake and let me take off. We're building additions. You know, people love us. I've got 75 employees. I have a lot of influence in the town now. And whatever we can do to get the vote for you, Joe, we could. You have to remember at that point, Time Magazine or one of the magazines had a front page story that said Kayla Boggs has 80% of the vote in Delaware. And Joe Biden has 20%. So we're thinking Kayla Boggs is going to win against the younger, more progressive Joe Biden. And we took it from 80 and we won by 3,000 votes.
So
by November. The one thing that I do have, the second fundraiser came in September. And I know the date because I have a picture where it is stamped on the picture. And strangely enough, I had one of the very, very, very first Polaroid cameras. And there was a gentleman there named Tom Stilts. And he was a photographer and he was a really good friend of mine. He's the one that took all those pictures of Jill in the coming years, you know, when she decided she wanted to do a little bit of modeling. And Tom was, you know, very great to work with. He took a picture, and thank goodness, I turned around, I handed him my Polaroid camera, and I said, Tommy, take a picture with my camera. So he took a picture on that date, that night, the second fundraiser. Joe was on the right, Jill was in the center, and I'm on the left. I'm wearing a suede sport jacket with jeans and cowboy boots. So I looked like I was 6'6" instead of the 6'4" that I was. Jill was in the middle, and I had my hair down to my shoulders by that time. I had gone from a football player to, as Coach Raymond said, you got that hippie look, Bill, you know. A couple of months after, you know, I left the University of Delaware football team, but it was in, you know, it's like it's a little kind joke, tongue-of-cheek type thing. And I'm in that thing, and there's that picture. I still have today.
So we know where this is all going. So I want to ask you first, though, in retrospect, do you have any sense that they may have had some sort of, extramarital relationship before the election?
Greg, this is like one of those, like, how would you put it, like tales that are out there. I've seen so much news stories that like she was his babysitter at 15. And there's a picture of Jill sitting on his lap and they're saying she was 15 at the time. I don't think they interact. I don't think she was like had anything to do with him in September of 1972. There was, she, you know, talked to Nelia for a minute. She was so involved with her friends. Ironically, that night she had a couple of friends visiting us from her hometown up in Hatboro, Pennsylvania. So she was involved with them. It turned out to be a fundraiser. The Stone Balloon was packed. There were like 1,000 people. And I know there were 1,000 people because everybody paid $3 to come through the door. And that was a minimum. It wasn't even really a cover. And that was the $3,000 I put into an envelope that you would put like a fifth of beer in. I mean, a fifth of vodka or something like that from the package store. I put $3,000. I just took the door money, put it in a bag, handed it to Frankie Biden. And, you know, his associate there, I believe, Bertie Clementi was there that night as, you know, chief of staff later on in life. You know, the people who were running Joe's campaign were all there. It was a big event. I don't think Jill talked to him or talked to Nelia that night. And I think that, I mean, I know basically when he got her attention. If you want to talk about that now, or do you want to ask about that later? What do you think?
Well, okay. So,
I don't think anything happened before the election.
All right.
Absolutely. And I believe that.
And he gets elected. Now she tells the story that you guys drop by, you drop by the election celebration and you coaxed her into going by promising that you would get her dinner across the street at some place.
Okay. Our favorite restaurant turned out to be not in Newark, Delaware. It was Wilmington, Delaware. And it was across the street from the Hotel DuPont, except for one thing. He had a big suite in rooms. I had a big suite literally right next to his at the Hotel DuPont. It was a big deal when he won. I couldn't believe it. Nobody around us could believe it. And I was right there. There were three other big donors at the time. I really don't want to mention their names, but like the Lutz family was like the biggest one. Big insurance company. But it was my cash that everybody around me, like that night, I was a hero because everybody felt that the turn that made the most important direction of where the election went was being able to stop the news journal from saying that we should pick Caleb Boggs and not Joe Biden. He's not experienced enough. Joe's turn will be in the next 6 years, not now. And I gave the $3,000 that they gave to the union, to Frank Sheeran, to shut down the news journal so that they didn't endorse Caleb Boggs. That was the turn in the election. Had that news journal Sunday paper come out, Joe would have lost the election. They needed $3,000 so badly, I thought Frankie was going to cry. And I actually realized, I heard it was for what you call walking around money that people still talk about in elections where they pay people to go vote. That's what I thought the money was for. Until I watched the transaction between Melvin Monzak and Frank Sheeran to give the $3,000, we were about 50, 60 yards apart. And because I had to give it to Frankie. Frankie, I watched him walk right up, give it to Joe Biden's law partner. And he met them right in front of the what they now call the Biden train station. And, you know, guess what? That paper was never delivered.
So the paper was printed but not delivered, right? The paper had the endorsement.
Oh, the paper. I have. Everybody has. Like, it's like a collector's item. Because somebody actually ended up with about 30 or 40 of the newspapers and gave us all like one or two of them back then. Somewhere I still have that. I'm a pack rat. I have a warehouse full of stuff that I haven't looked through in 35 years. But the election went off and Newark, who I mentioned earlier, went like 85% Biden and, you know, 15% Boggs, and, you know, we won. So we were actually at the Hotel DuPont staying there. Jill was there. I was there. Everybody was there. It was a party. And so that little story she's making up because she knows there's pictures of Nelia and Joe, Jill, and I. Listen, the DNC and the Biden campaign has gone and threatened right before the election people that had pictures, people that had stories, and they said if any of this stuff even comes out, this is a story that's going to break down the road. I don't know whether these people are too scared to talk, but, you know, come in the near future, and in my book, I name these people, and I name what the Biden for president people said to them and threatened them with. And if you go back and you listen to the story in 1982, it was just like Frankie Biden threatening me that things were going to get bad for me. And in 1982, 2 months later, they sure did. And it never stopped. So what happened back then happened in 82, and it happened 2.5 years ago right here in Wilmington, Delaware, and Baltimore, Maryland. People were threatened to get rid of the pictures and do not give them to me.
What were the pictures of exactly? I mean, the pictures from that fundraiser? I mean, they don't, like, what were the pictures that they were so worried about?
Well, there were multiple pictures from what I understand. They were more concerned about the pictures of Jill and the modeling. There is a picture that's going to be in my book that really, I wasn't going to put it in the book, but things have changed in the past couple weeks. A picture of Jill just in a vest. And it's a beautiful picture. And strangely enough, the person who took the picture said he had no copies of it and no, you know, no way to make another copy. And a friend of mine ended up having a picture and dropped it off at my house, in front of my house. It's amazing. That was the main picture they want, but it's too late. I have that. And there were pictures of the fundraisers. I don't want to mention the one person's name that worked for the News Journal because he is still around. He's still popular, but everybody in Delaware knows who he is. And his first name is Fred. I won't mention his last name out of respect for him. But I know for a fact that most of his pictures of the campaign in 72 were destroyed, because I have no idea how many pictures were taken the night of the election. But I know I stood in front of a camera at least 20 different times with him, whether Jill was there or Nelia was there. I have no idea. I've never seen those pictures. But it was such a shock win. People were threatened, you know, that's not fair. It's not fair, Greg.
Okay. Let's go to, he's a senator. Everybody's shocked, but life is beautiful. You know, this guy, he's a United States senator. Do you stay friends with him? Like right away, does he blow you off after that point or,
No, nothing happened right in the beginning, except the tragic accident that changed everything. I mean, her accident, to this day, it's probably one of the saddest days in my life. I think I even said to you privately, I said it was more upsetting than the death of my parents. And like when I found out Nelia had been killed, and I could not believe it. And that was right after the election. So we went from celebrating the election to making plans to no Nelia in our lives, no Naomi in our lives, and the boys badly hurt in the hospital. That took a year. And after that, the stone balloon literally, I say in my book, took on a life of its own. We had people begging us on the national level to play at the stone balloon on their way into Philly or their way out of Baltimore or going up and down 95. So I was just working very, very hard. And then when I started to slow down just a little bit in the beginning of 1974, we took a night off and went up and saw Bruce Springsteen. And that forever changed my life. And I saw an amazing band, amazing people. And I begged him to come to the Stone Balloon. And then in August, they said, we have no money. We need money to come to the Stone Balloon. We just got off tour with Chicago where we made no money. We need a place to go play. try out some music, Bill. Can you come up and pay us in advance? And in August, that's now famous because of you and because of our interview on Newsmax. I asked her to go see, you know, Bruce Springsteen. And she said, I got to watch the boys. That was the first clue. I had been warned that Joe and Jill were getting too close, and I never even thought about that. And next thing I know, I had to babysit the boys, and that was, you know, the beginning of the downfall.
Babysit the Biden boys. And I'm sorry, what year is this now?
That is August. It was mid-August. He ended up playing the Stone Balloon.
Yeah, August of what year?
August of 1974. So there had been some time. That 2 years is critical, because the thing is, if anything happened before that or they got together for something, I have no idea. As you know, Greg, the divorce, I could care about. It all worked out for me. And I have said to you, and I've said that everybody around me knows that it hurt. It shocked a lot of people. And so from 72 to 74, my first knowledge that something was going on was one of her best friends came to me in the end of July and said that they were going down to Washington for a girls' weekend. I rented a big place down there for them to stay at one of the hotels. I let them use my Suburban. I hired a driver who drove them down and went down and picked them up. And apparently what actually happened was something that hurt everybody's feelings, that Jill sort of disappeared in July of 74. And they didn't see her for like a day. And next thing you know, she shows up and her friends were hurt. And she came back and she said, Joe and Jill are getting too close. She didn't say an affair or didn't go into details till later. I heard the whole details later after I had asked Jill in September, early October, that she had to move out of our house, that you know, I was going to provide a home for her to go live. I just didn't want her around me anymore. So that was not that big a deal, strangely enough. And I told you, Greg, the hardest part was losing her family. Because at that point, I had a brother who worked for me and a sister that worked for me, and my family was right by me, but that was it. But I did miss her mother and father. And, you know, that's the timeline. I do not believe anything happened before that July of 1974.
You had a feeling, an inkling in August, July, and then August, you know, babysitting the boys, and then something happened with a car?
Absolutely. For her birthday in June, she told me a funny story that she started asking me questions about Corvettes. Now, whether that was Joe's 66 Corvette, you know, he didn't have a 67 Corvette back then. He had a 66 Corvette that I knew of. But she asked me about a Corvette, and I just thought it was an innocent statement. And that was around July, you know, and I figured, I mean, about June. And I said to myself, I woke up one morning and I said, you know what? Things are different. I've been working hard. I ran over to the Chevrolet dealership, Porter Chevrolet. There were two cars. There was a yellow Corvette and there was a metallic brown Corvette. So I went home, drove out to our house. I said, what color? If you were going to do, we were looking at curtains. If you were, and I heard a funny story about these curtains just recently. If we were going to do curtains, would you do yellow or like sort of a metallic brownish? And she goes, oh, metallic brown. I love metallic brown. Boom, I went back and bought that Corvette for her. So now fast forward, that's June, early June. Buy her Corvette. Everybody's saying this beautiful blonde running all over Newark. Oh, my God. You know, it was almost like advertising for the bar. People would come to the bar just to see if they could see her. And in August, a guy walks into the Stone Balloon package store, and he looked like a normal guy, told me he worked for DuPont. You know, I can see the guy today as clear as day, like 6 foot, a little bit of grayish hair, probably maybe 50, You know, at that time I was, you know, like 24, 25, and older guy. And he said, Mr. Stevenson, do you own a brown Corvette? I explained to him, yes, I do. It's my wife's car. He said, well, a brown Corvette the other night, about a week ago, backed into the back of my Buick. And they said that they were going to stop by. Now, I hadn't really thought of anything then. I thought Jill backed into this guy in a parking lot. And I'm thinking, why wouldn't she tell me that she backed into a car in the parking lot? And why would she tell this guy that she was going to come back and pay for the damage if he had an estimate? Because, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Greg, there was probably $10,000 in my house, which, by the way, I don't do anymore with the world the way it is now. But the thing is, there was money there. And I said, wow. And I said, well, let me talk to her. And he goes, well, do you want to see the car? And I said, the car is here. He walked outside. Right in front of the stone balloon was a 1970, like maybe 70 or 71 Buick Electra. And the back bumper was bent in where it took a little bit of chip of the paint off, and it was crinkled where the tag was. You could clearly see somebody backed into them from a weird angle, okay? And I didn't think anything about it. At this point, I said to myself, you know, I'll just pay it. He handed me a little, like, yellow receipt. It looked like a copy. And it was from Henry's Body Shop, which is in Wilmington, Delaware. I know that now. I never heard of Henry's. I knew this guy wasn't lying. I know this Corvette backed into the back. And then he said something that's crazy. I said, I'm really surprised that she had an accident and didn't tell me. And he turns around on the sidewalk and he looks right at me like, should I say this or not type of look? But he said, oh, no, she wasn't driving. Senator Biden was driving. Then I knew. September of 1974. That was the final straw.
So you're friends with Joe Biden. You're married to Jill. I think you told me you just drop it. You don't confront Joe about this, right?
I never brought it up. I knew, he knew. That I knew, obviously, because, you know, I came home, I looked at the car first, and you could clearly see that it was punched in. It was, you know, fiberglass. And I'm telling you, I said to myself, it's exactly where the bumper on this guy's car was. So I wasn't just conned out of $600. I knew there was an accident. I walked in the house, and I'm looking at her. And I'm walking around the house, so to speak. I knew that this was going to be probably the biggest decision I made in my life. And I walked into the bedroom, and I thought for a couple minutes, and I walked back out, and she was standing in the kitchen, which was right by the front door. And I said, you've made a decision. You're breaking my heart, but you have got to go. You have got to move out of here. I'm calling your father like in minutes, and I'm telling him you're coming home. And she begged me to stay. And it was, you know, around 7 o'clock at night. I had to go back to the stone balloon. I said, okay, stay tonight, leave tomorrow. We'll get some stuff together. I'll do anything for you, but I can never trust you again.
All right. Sorry for asking, but do you think she was like seduced by his political power, the prestige, you know, of a senator, or was it true love, or, you know, was it like a, you know, the thrill of an extramarital thing? What do you chalk it up to?
I do take some blame myself. I was working hard. You know, it had been like a crazy 2 years. I went from a guy that You know, was working for like $6 an hour part-time at a gas station in Newark, Delaware, attending the University of Delaware and playing football, with a father who had just passed away and a mother that was very, very, very ill and passed away the year before that. And I lost both my parents. And so I will take some responsibility that maybe I was trying to work a little too hard to forget about all that. And I went from being nothing to a bar in 2 years that all of a sudden was just appraised at millions. And people approaching us and saying, we want to build one here, we want to build one there, and I wanted to keep it special. I've said this, and I believe I've said it to you when we talked privately, and I said it to you on the interview. I think what happened here was, she fell in love with Joe Biden. And I think she fell in love with these, at that point, wonderful little boys that, you know, were recovering from a loss of their mom, being ignored by Joe, who had just taken over the youngest Senate seat in the history of the United States. And so there was a lot going on. I believe she fell in love with the boys and then fell in love with Joe and did not know what to do or how to tell me or how to get out of it. And I made it as easy as possible. I could tell she was struggling. She is a wonderful person. There is nothing but respect I have for her to this day. But you know how I feel, and the whole world knows how I feel about President Biden. He is destroying this country now. He is attacking President Trump. He has used this on me later on in my life in 1982, which I believe we're going to be talking about. But back in 1974, that had nothing to do with it. And I to this day, and I said this on the interview on Newsmax, I do care about her. And I want nothing but good for her. And I just feel badly for her because I think she's a little shocked what's going on in the country and how radical Joe has come with these ideas and who he's appointing and the decision after decisions that he's making that are nothing but bad. I said the other night to you privately on the phone, I do believe that he is so compromised through the dealings of Hunter, and there is so much information out there, I just can't believe that the mainstream press is trying to hide this. I don't understand it. And if there's anything I can do to help our former President Trump, and anything I can help to change the leadership of this country, it's not personal, it's because I love my country, and I do not want this to go any further. We need a change at the top. And I do hope that it is President Trump, and I will do anything within my power to help that happen.
Bill Stevenson, great guy. And what happens to him next, we'll get into it next week. The FBI comes after him. The Department of Justice comes after him, all because Joe Biden was bitter about this guy. And back in the 80s, 90s, and beyond, you know, if you were a senator, a United States senator in a small place like Delaware, you were a prince, and you can get anything you want done. And what they put Bill Stevenson through is a crime. So I look forward to sharing with you that part of the conversation. In the meantime, please check out D'Espresso Liber, D'EspressoLiber.com, D'EspressoLiber.com. Great coffee, founded by a Green Beret almost a decade ago who developed a dedication to crafting these outstanding brews. D'Espresso Liber coffee is amazing, and it's rich in flavor and American values. It encourages all of us to sit down together and unite with fellow patriots to celebrate our God-given rights. D'EspressoLiber.com. D'EspressoLiber.com. Please check them out. They are awesome. And to be continued, and many thanks.